Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Quantum Spirituality on DreamVision7RadioNetwork.com, the show where past spiritual wisdom and present-day science merge to show us our future. Your host is Peter Canova, author of the 25-time award-winning book series, The First Souls Trilogy, available on Amazon, and Peter's website, petercanova.com. That's PeterCanova.com. This show is a live video, so if you're only listening and want to watch, go to Peter's website, petercanova.com, PeterCanova.com, where you can access his Facebook page to leave comments or questions, and click the D7RN link where you can receive a free gift video.
Hello, everybody. I'm Peter Canova, your host on Quantum Spirituality. And you may be wondering why this weird background. Well, for those of you that heard my announcement on the show last month, my home burnt down along with pretty much everything in it. And the reason I want to talk about this today is not to be dramatic, but to illustrate a point that relates, cuts to the heart of the very topic of this show, which is consciousness and its effects and its workings. The fire occurred on January 6th at approximately 5:15 to 5:30 in the morning. It started in the garage, which you can see in back of me is a complete mess. And if you look on the right-hand side, you can see some remaining wall studs, which is where the master bedroom is that I normally sleep, contiguous or right next to the garage. The morning of the fire, I woke up a little bit before 5 a.m. For whatever reason, I couldn't sleep. And then I did something that I rarely do, which is that I went into a room in the far corner of the home to watch television. Now, I'm not going to tell you that I don't often wake up early in the morning. Sometimes I do. But if I do watch television, there's a TV right in the bedroom that I could watch from my bed that's perfectly fine. But for whatever reason, I decided to get up and I decided to go to another room. Within about 15 or 20 minutes, I heard a very strange noise. It sounded like a boom. And I went around to the other side of the house and looked down the hallway where the bedroom and the entrance to the garage was. And I saw a major glow and smoke just starting to billow inside the home. I tried to get to my bedroom where I have my phone, and I couldn't reach it because by that time the smoke was so bad that I was like choking. Now, they often say, they say all the time that in the case of a fire, it's not the fire that usually gets people, it's the smoke, because the fire sucks the oxygen out of the air and the smoke, you know, basically quickly chokes you. And I was extremely fortunate that I was on the other side of the home at the time that this happened, because even after the alarm went off, there was plenty of smoke and heat at that part of the house such that I could not get back in the bedroom to even get the phone to call 911. Now, at that point, I realized, seeing, you know, the flames coming down the hallway there, that the house was probably lost. And my first thought was for my neighbors, because these units are connected. It's kind of like a fourplex. And I was in my pajamas, ran out and started banging on every door, alerting people that there was a fire and to have them call 911. So what's the reason why I'm recounting all this? Well, you know, something got me up and I don't really know what it was. Literally just a few minutes before that fire started. Now, normally I would have been sleeping in that bedroom. And had I been sleeping in the bedroom, that smoke came in so quick, burning through into the bedroom, that I very well could have been cut off from exiting the hallway. And my only recourse would have been to break out through a window. But we have these heavy special metal screens that are screwed on to the exterior of the home, almost like storm windows. The reason we put them up there is because of golf balls hitting the house. The home is on a golf course, and they're pretty well and strongly screwed in there. So the winds that we frequently get will take them off. So I would have found myself trying to kick through those windows while this smoke was raging in the room. And as it was, even being where I had been during the fire, I had to be treated for smoke inhalation. And had I been in the bedroom, it would have been much, much worse. So I don't really know what would have happened, but I just know that it wouldn't have been good, and I wouldn't have probably gotten out there as well as I did. But like I said, something prompted me at that time to get up and go to a part of the home that I normally would never be in during those hours. Now, how does that relate to consciousness? Well, I firmly believe that a part of me, and remember I said that we are just projections of our own higher selves, that we're multidimensional beings, that our levels of consciousness do just that. They exist over different levels. And I really believe that there's a higher level that knows what's going on down here a lot better than what we do, we being our conscious minds. But our super conscious minds really have a pretty good grip on what's happening here. And if you have practiced consciousness enough, as we've tried to demonstrate in the show, that connection becomes stronger. The veil between our everyday working conscious minds and our higher consciousness gets thinner, and we get more information coming through. And I don't believe that it was any coincidence or any matter of luck that I was in that other part of the house that I was in when the fire started. Now, you could say it was coincidence or say it was luck. But, you know, as I mentioned in some earlier shows, I've had close calls on several times in my life. I was in one of the Chicken Soup for the Soul books, and I recounted an experience I had in Africa, a premonition that actually saved my life. When other people who were in the taxi that I was supposed to be in were killed in a remote part of Africa. And I've had other instances where I had very, very close calls, but something kind of pulled me through it. So I completely feel, based on my history and experience, that my being up just minutes before that fire started was no accident. And this is why I'm basically talking about the incident today on this show, because I want people to understand that this is one of the effects, and this is one of the workings of consciousness. Now, I had a guest on my show a while ago, another host on Dream Vision 7 Radio, Cat Cannabis, and she related to you how premonitions of dreams of hers saved her life when she was diagnosed subsequently with cancer, which originally the doctors all missed, and it had reached a rather advanced stage. But she was so insistent because of her premonitions and her dreams, which was her consciousness talking to her, that it eventually saved her life. And she went on to work with a doctor in a book who had chronicled histories of other people who had had these dreams or premonitions, telling them that something was wrong when the medical community was saying, no, you're fine. So these are just other examples of where consciousness comes into play to dramatically affect the course of a person's life. In this case, thankfully, you know, for the better. And I think that we try in this show to, you know, really dissect as much as we can and examine what consciousness is and how consciousness works. And what I feel that I just related to you is one of those examples. Now, I learned a couple of other things, which is that I lost a lot of stuff. But, you know, in looking at it, I don't feel terribly bad about it, because you accumulate a lot of stuff that you don't really use. And what I really have realized through this whole thing is that the very simple, basic things are all we really need to get by and be happy with. You know, we don't need so many of these things that we accumulate. What I was most grateful for is having a terrific set of friends that helped me out that day of the fire, and even afterwards. I had a lot of friends rally around me, and that was fantastic, because it just goes to show you that, you know, friendships are and other people are just so important in your life. And the other thing, like I said, is, yeah, I lost a lot of possessions, but I don't really particularly have a whole lot of regrets. I mean, I wasn't hurt, and other people, neighbors, you know, were not hurt. And to me, that was really the most important thing. I mean, that had anybody really been hurt as a result of that fire, it would have been, the feeling would have been quite devastating. But nobody was injured. And, you know, other things are replaceable. And what I'm really thinking is, I'm taking an inventory and I'm saying, well, gee, you know, what are all the things I have to replace? Well, really, there's not a heck of a lot of things on that checklist that are really necessary. So, you know, it kind of gives me a chance to simplify things a little bit. You know, didn't need all those clothes, didn't need all the little gimmicks and things like that. You know, and I'm just, you know, getting a better perspective here on what's really important in life and what counts. So the funny thing is that there's always a silver lining, they say, at the on every black cloud, and getting to learn a couple of little silver linings here. I do want to relate the show today back to the story about the fire, but I'm going to do it in a kind of roundabout way. There was a very interesting book recently published by a professor named Mark Solms of the University of Cape Town. And he talks about the seat of consciousness not so much being in our thoughts, but in our emotions. And he uses the example of a zombie version of ourselves that may see something like a red apple, and it will record on the senses and they can react to it, but they have no feeling about it, no emotion about it. And it's kind of interesting, because there exists a tradition in almost every religion, a belief that at one time there were humanoid creatures living on this planet, but they had no soul. They had no consciousness as we know it. There's a Judeo-Christian, or at least a Judaic tradition, about this type of being preceding Adam in the Bible. And in fact, the great American psychic Edgar Cayce described this situation in a number of his readings. And my third book of my trilogy, The Light of Distant Suns, covers some of this interesting topic. Anyway, the point here is that it's entirely plausible to be able to think of a type of being, whether it's Mr. Spock or something more primitive, that certainly can analytically sense and react to things, but not have emotions about it. And he raises some very interesting points. I do believe that there was a time when there were physical human-like forms on this earth. I also believe that there was a point in time when consciousness from another dimension essentially merged or coupled with those forms to create what we call today's modern humans or Homo sapiens. It's a fact, a puzzling fact, that Homo sapiens appeared on the scene very suddenly, very rapidly, almost without precedent, without fossil precedent, in the evolutionary chain. And this really seems to give some credence to the fact that there was a point where something qualitatively different occurred in these human creatures, that there was a source of consciousness in effect that started to permeate their physical bodies. Because really, a human being is really as we know it today, is really a soul coupled in a physical form. And our physical form really, in many ways, is not any different from any other animal in most regards that it counts. So, you know, we get back to what Mark Solms has talked about in terms of emotions or feelings being probably primary in the way that consciousness expresses itself in the human being. Now, let's just talk about emotions for a second. And I'm going to tell you something that you really need to think about. And this is a little bit of a reverse. My opinion that I'm going to give you is a little bit of a reverse in terms of how many scientists think about this. But my definition of an emotion is a thought attached to a feeling. So what does that mean? Feeling is a sensation. It's a raw movement of energy within the human organism. Or for that matter, it could be within other organisms, within other animals. It's just a movement of energy that can result from any number of different stimuli. So what's unique about human emotions is that we attach thoughts to those feelings. So for instance, if we take the feeling of fear, you can have an instinctual reaction, a fearful reaction, as animals do. For instance, when they're being hunted by another animal, they have a rush of feeling that tells them they're in danger and they start to run away. But it's not likely that they have a thought that's attached to that feeling that specifically says that, I'm about to be eaten. So I'm fearful and I'm having a fearful experience of being eaten. It's probably something more primitive in the animals. It's just an instinctual reaction. Whereas in the human being, a feeling can be coupled with a thought. Now, when the fire happened in my house, there came a point where I had a fearful reaction, but it wasn't fear for myself. I wasn't fear of losing my home, because I knew at a certain point that the home was toast. There was no way I could stop it. It had gone too far. And I was in a position, fortunately, after inhaling some smoke, I was in a position to run out of the home and escape. So I wasn't really fearful for my life. The thought that I attached to this whole feeling of fear was a fear for my neighbors, because our units are close together. And I was very concerned that this fire might spread and affect my neighbors. So I immediately proceeded to go around at 5:30 in the morning and pound on everybody's door to get them up and out of their homes. So, you know, that nobody would be injured. So the feeling I had, which was, you know, that it resulted from that sensation of seeing smoke and flames rushing at me, became attached to the thought that, wow, I got to do something about my neighbors. And that was the emotion of fear. That was how the emotion of fear expressed itself. So it was this thought attached to a feeling that produced fear. And so essentially, I really do believe that's what our emotions are. They're thoughts attached to feelings that produce our different emotions. And when you look at the whole idea of consciousness, what is it that distinguishes us from every other species on the planet? It's the quality of an experience that we have. In fact, there's a scientific term for it. It's called qualia, Q-U-A-L-I-A. Qualia are the experiences that we feel and we register inside of ourselves. So for instance, if we get back to the example of an apple, if you don't have consciousness but instinct, you will recognize the apple, you will look at it, but you will not really experience the redness of it. The quality of redness doesn't enter into your feeling or thinking. We see an apple and we sense something about it. We feel something about it. It's delicious. It's beautiful. We can paint it as many painters have done. They've taken pieces of fruit and they've made artistic masterpieces out of them. This is what makes us conscious, that distinguishes us from other species, that we have these qualities of experience. And really, when you think about it, it's those qualities, it's those felt qualities and feelings that really make us human, as opposed to just instinctual or robotic type of animals, let's say, instinctual reactions. It's the felt experience that really makes us human, and it's the record of these felt experiences that build up over our lifetimes that largely define our actions and define our characters. So clearly, consciousness does express itself through our emotions. I also believe it expresses itself through our thoughts. I believe we're multifaceted creatures. And really, what we consider ourselves, our identities, our egos, our perceptions of ourselves, we're really the tail end of a multifaceted soul or spirit, because we have different levels of consciousness. We have spirit consciousness, we have soul consciousness, we have human consciousness. And these are all really one consciousness, but they seem different to us because they are experienced and understood at different levels of awareness of perception. So you take an example of a lake high up in a mountain, and let's say that lake is consciousness, is the source of consciousness. So the lake flows down the mountain in a stream. The water is the same water that goes from the top of the lake to the bottom of the mountain. But on its journey downward, it picks up various things, pollutants, dirt, and so forth, and becomes a little bit less clear, and it becomes muddied, so that the water that is experienced down at the bottom of the mountain is different than the pure experience of the lake at the top, but it's all the same water. It's one in the same. It's just different perceptions at different levels. And that's what we are as human beings. We are body, we are mind or soul, and we are also spirit. And we function at some levels as one at the very, very highest levels. But from our perspective down here, let's say at the bottom where we're looking at things, we don't really understand this. We don't really see this. And our perceptions are limited and colored by the environment that we're in, the physical environment that we were in. Because if we were in a non-physical environment, as our souls are, we would perceive things entirely different. But we're tied in with a body which has sensations and so forth. So we experience consciousness through a certain filter, but it is still part of the one universal consciousness that permeates everything. This is Dream Vision 7 Radio and TV Network and Quantum Spirituality with Peter Canova. I am your host, author of the 25-time award-winning First Souls Trilogy, which is available on my website, petercanova.com. That's PETERCANOVA.com. Please visit when you have a chance, and we'll be back shortly.
The First Souls Trilogy, one of the most highly awarded fictional independent book series on the market, is a grand vision of human evolution. It chronicles the first spirit consciousness to enter the material world in three page-turning novels that introduce a new paradigm of reality based on genuine ancient wisdom and quantum science. These inspirational thrillers will force you to rethink the nature of the world in which we live. visit the petercanova.com website for information and ordering. In a world facing annihilation, a miraculous African nun rises to become the first female pope through a web of war, murder, and betrayal. Loved by some, hated by many, she becomes the deadly target of Islamic terrorists and her own cardinals as she introduces a new vision that will either save humanity or accelerate its destruction. Four people must race against a nuclear holocaust to learn her astonishing secret. Pope Annalisa is available at petercanova.com, Amazon, and other online booksellers and bookstores worldwide.
Why are we here? How can we be happy? Questions asked from millennials to boomers. Crappy to Happy, Sacred Stories of Transformational Joy answers them using true stories of grit, grace, and love. James Redfield, author of The Celestine Prophecy, wrote in the foreword, "This book is a seminar about emerging truths and offers grounded solutions through the art of the comeback." Dr. Bernie Siegel, a contributing author, wrote, "Bodies die, but spirits and consciousness survive and recycle." So, grab some tissues, open your book, and prepare to cry and laugh till it heals. Crappy to Happy by Reverend Ariel Patricia and Kathleen O'Keefe Cannabis. Available from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and booksellers worldwide.
How did life start on Earth, and why is there so much suffering? Are we living in a simulated reality like the characters in the Matrix movie? Do parallel dimensions exist alongside ours, influencing our experience? What are the mysterious dark energies that penetrate our universe? Peter Canova folds space and time to bring the twin bookends of ancient wisdom and quantum science into a single focal point, answering these and many other deep mysteries of the creation. Quantum Spirituality can be heard every Tuesday at 10 a.m. and 10 p.m. Eastern and 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Pacific on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network. See the show where past and present merge to show us our future.
This is Dream Vision 7 radio network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
Welcome back to Quantum Spirituality on Dream Vision 7 radio and TV network. I'm your host, Peter Canova, and you can find out more about me on my website, petercanova.com. That's petercanova.com, where you can learn more about some of the works that I've done. And one of my most popular books, Pope Annalisa, I'm happy to say, is now out on audio format. It's available on audio, or Audible, I should say, put out by ACX, which I believe is affiliated with Amazon. So please check that out when you have a chance. Also, if you have any questions or comments for me, you can leave them on my Facebook page, which is Peter Canova Author, or you can access that same page through my website. So we've talked a lot about consciousness on this show, and now maybe it's time to talk about some of those things that run counter to consciousness. There's a long tradition that runs throughout every culture of what I guess I'd call counterforces, psychic or spiritual counterforces. And let's start by talking about or defining a little bit the people in these various cultures who are able to really detect these things. Let's call them spiritual doctors. Shamanism is the general term that a lot of this could come under. People could be called sorcerers, like in Don Juan, or bush doctors, they used to call them in Africa, mystics, whatever the case might be. It can all generally fall under the heading of shamanism. So shamanism can be traced at least back about 12,000 years in Siberia, where the shamanic rituals at least first appeared from a fossil record. And the shamans were simply those people that recognized that there were two worlds, or at least more than one world. There was the physical world, and then there was the non-physical world. Now, there could be several planes of that non-physical world, but just to simplify things, let's just keep it at one term, non-physical. And the shamans were those who were able to walk between those worlds. And the shamans would essentially go into states where they would make contact with the consciousness of those planes and bring the knowledge of that back to hopefully help people with healing advice or whatever the case may be. But every culture had its mystical seers who were able to project their consciousness, or I would say maybe contact their higher consciousness, however the case may be, and penetrate through the layers of the physical world to get information that we would not normally be aware of. And if you go to back to the Gnostics, and again, much of my work and what I talk about in this show relates back to the Gnostics, who were mystics that really cut across a lot of different traditions. They incorporated elements of Eastern Buddhism, Hinduism, Christianity, and pagan knowledge, pagan rituals. The Gnostics predated Christ, but they were like the first Christians, effectively, when they recognized Jesus's ministry for what it was. They knew that Jesus was a great presence, and they became the first Christians. And the Gnostics were quite amazing. We've talked about them in other shows. Now, the Gnostics identified some beings that they called archons. Now, archons in Greek means rulers. The archons were a little bit hard to explain sometimes. They were a counterforce to progress of the human race from a spiritual standpoint. Where do these archons come from? Well, according to the Gnostic texts, they were there almost from the very beginning. They were the counterforce that was there I guess in some views, you could say that they were there to offer an opposite pole to the Supreme Being, thereby setting up choice or free will, a spectrum of choice or free will for souls to go between. But the archons themselves were said to be powerful entities. And there's questions whether they ever assumed physical form. Probably they were able to project aspects of themselves into the physical plane, but there's never really any record of them taking physical form exactly. They were more influencers in a negative sense, influencing humans to go astray, to set up obstacles for them to attain spiritual freedom and work their way back to the supreme circle of the Supreme Being, from where all spirit or all soul derived. So they were like these retardant forces that were present and very active and working to keep people from achieving their spiritual awakening. Now, there has been some interpretations, even by modern scholars, that these are actually physical beings that reside in another part of the galaxy. I'm really not going to comment on that because I think it just sidetracks us from where we want to go here. But you have other evidence of these counterforces in the writings of Don Juan, and Carlos Castaneda, I should say, wrote the books about Don Juan, the Mexican sorcerer. And he would talk about beings called flyers, and they were able to the Mexican sorcerers were able to detect these kind of shadow beings, and they call them flyers because they seem to flit around. It's like you see them out of the corner of their eyes, of your eyes. And these flyers, they said, really were kind of the predominant force in this plane. And what human beings were challenged with was breaking through this sort of psychic ring of darkness in order to get through to the light and get through to the higher consciousness. There are other beings described in different cultures, but you even have a book actually to look at it from a psychological standpoint, which you can also look at it through. Carl Jung called part of ourselves the shadow, where we had a lot of turmoil inside our unconscious mind that was very counterproductive to our well-being. Another good example I should probably cite are the kahunas of the Hawaiian tradition. Now, the kahunas were pretty astute, and the kahunas recognized there was a higher self and a lower self. And the kahuna's goal, of course, was to merge or communicate with the higher self. But they said that there were certain things that prevented that from happening, which they called complexes. Now, that shades into more of the psychological field. But I think all these things are related. Whether we are influenced by the psychic forces that come from another plane, or whether this is purely something that arises from within us, again, is something I'm not going to cover here. I do tend to think that there are forces out there that intrude in our thinking and give rise to unwholesome ways of handling our lives that become real impediments. But it all goes through us. It flows through us one way or another, whether it arises purely from within our psyches or whether it is part of a sort of astral intrusion, it still plays out through us. And it is these complexes, as the Hunas call them, that can really hold our lives back. Now, those complexes can come from any form of guilt, bad experiences that are unresolved, something that makes you feel unworthy or that turns your head from pursuing a higher path. Any of these things could be considered complexes that affect our ability to move forward, and move forward in a spiritual sense, or move forward really in every sense. And the complexes are something that has been recognized in the psychological field, certainly, but it's also described in different terms, in spiritual terms, by these different seers. Or mystics. So these are some of the things that we need to be aware of. And in meditation, pay very close attention to where your mind goes, because if your mind is dwelling on certain things, and incidentally, the hallmarks of these things that hold us back are fear, anger. Those are two of the primary emotions, and they're very closely related, fear and anger, that have a lot to do with holding us back. And this could be related to incidents that happen in this life, incidents that happen in other lives or whatever, but they are active seeds within ourselves that we really need to deal with. And meditation can certainly be one of those ways to delve in and recognize what some of those impediments are. Now, in a previous show, I showed you two pictures side by side, two quotes side by side by the Gnostic Gospel of Thomas that said, what you bring forth will save you, what you do not bring forth will destroy you. And Carl Jung essentially said the same thing, that if we don't deal with a shadow, that it will come back in ways that essentially bite us. So throughout a 2,000-year span, you have astute people telling us the same thing, which is that somewhere in the depths of our unconscious minds, there lurk these shadows, and that we have to contend with them. We have to confront them, and we have to contend with them. Otherwise, they overcome our lives with fear and despair and depression and paralysis. I think, you know, we've all been there. I know I certainly have. I'm kind of going through it right now after everything that happened with the home fire and everything else. You know, it's just something that we need to be aware of, because when you begin or you start on the road to higher consciousness, it's just not the yellow brick road and roses are going to be thrown at your feet. There's going to be tests and trials that you have to deal with within yourself. You know, you want to deal with those and emerge at the other end as a stronger person. The whole idea of these counterforces has permeated pop culture too. A number of decades ago, there was a great science fiction book by an author named Colin Wilson called The Mind Parasites. And that term mind parasites is actually something that has been kicked around or used for, you know, a few thousand years now to describe these opposition forces that I've been speaking of. And in the book, The Mind Parasites, it was actually an alien race, which is a very Gnostic concept. The Gnostics were all treated the Archons almost as an alien race. There was an alien race that essentially would invade the minds of human beings and control them and subvert them and so forth. So I always found it interesting when I read that book that he used the term mind parasites. I kind of wonder if Colin Wilson ever actually read up on the Gnostic texts or some of these other texts that describe these counterforce beings. But, you know, you also have the whole Christian idea of the devil. Now, originally in Christianity, or I should say Judeo-Christianity, because it really did derive first from Judaism. Originally in Judeo-Christianity, the devil was not the cloven hoof guy with the horns and breathing fire and so forth. The devil was the angel of opposition. It wasn't an evil figure, but he was a figure that had the purpose of creating obstacles for human beings to overcome, which was necessary for their spiritual growth to kind of wake out of the state of sleep that they were in effect, the state of slumber that they were in, and recognize their true nature. Their true nature as spiritual beings. So, you know, the whole concept of devil, at least in the original sense, plays into these forces of opposition. It depends a lot on the way people look at it. Some people look at it as a little bit more benign, a benign necessity to create a pole, kind of a polar opposition to the goodness of the Supreme Being, in order for spirits to gravitate or, you know, evolve between that pole through their free choice to choose to, you know, go back into, you know, oneness with the whole, or just get lost in pursuit of their own individual desires. And if you look at the ancient texts, it's largely through free will and desire that we came down here. We had the desire not to conform to the kind of, I don't know why I should call it, hive mentality of heaven, where things were a little bit more in lockstep. I might be make that sound too harsh, because it really was a harmonious plane as it was envisioned by many of the ancients, and abandon that in order to pursue our own individual desires. And so it was the whole force of desire that eventually led us to express individuality, extreme individuality in the form of separate bodies on a material plane. And if you look at the whole central tenet of Buddhism, it's to eliminate ourselves from those desires in order to ascend, in order to achieve Buddha or higher consciousness, in order to ascend back to where we came from. It's time for a break. I'm your host, Peter Canova, and this is Quantum Spirituality, the show where the past and the present merge to tell us about our future. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
The First Souls Trilogy, one of the most highly awarded fictional independent book series on the market, is a grand vision of human evolution. It chronicles the first spirit consciousness to enter the material world in three page-turning novels that introduce a new paradigm of reality based on genuine ancient wisdom and quantum science. These inspirational thrillers will force you to rethink the nature of the world in which we live. Visit the PeterCanova.com website for information and ordering. In a world facing annihilation, a miraculous African nun rises to become the first female pope through a web of war, murder, and betrayal. Loved by some, hated by many, she becomes the deadly target of Islamic terrorists and her own cardinals as she introduces a new vision that will either save humanity or accelerate its destruction. Four people must race against a nuclear holocaust to learn her astonishing secret. Pope Annalisa is available at PeterCanova.com, Amazon, and other online booksellers and bookstores worldwide.
What if dreams can diagnose your life? What if we can meet the love of our life in dreams? Join host Cat O'Keefe Canovas, the number one internationally best-selling author of Dreams That Can Save Your Life, written with Duke University medical doctor Larry Burke. Dreaming Healing is where we'll explore dreams, research, and interpret dreams from you, the caller. Dreaming Healing shows can be heard every Tuesday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern, with live shows on the first and third evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific Time on syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Come live your dreams out loud with Kat.
How did life start on Earth, and why is there so much suffering? Are we living in a simulated reality like the characters in the Matrix movie? Do parallel dimensions exist alongside ours, influencing our experience? What are the mysterious dark energies that penetrate our universe? Peter Canova folds space and time to bring the twin bookends of ancient wisdom and quantum science into a single focal point, answering these and many other deep mysteries of the creation. Quantum Spirituality can be heard every Tuesday at 10 a.m. and 10 p.m. Eastern and 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Pacific on syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. See the show where past and present merge to show us our future.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
We're back, and I'm your host, Peter Canova. Incidentally, you can listen to the show online in your car with Bluetooth or on Amazon Echo simply by saying, Alexa, play Dream Vision 7. You can also go to my website, petercanova.com, that's P-E-T-E-R-C-A-N-O-V-A.com, where you can access the show and the archives, or you can leave comments through the portal accessing to my Facebook page, Peter Canova Author, and leave any comments, questions that you may have there. So now in the final segment of the show, I want you all to practice a little exercise during your meditation. When you get deep into your meditative state, I want you to imagine there are two doors. And you can sort of sense a darkness about the first door, but you can see light coming through the second door. So what I want you to do is gradually open up that dark door and see what it is inside, what it is that you're afraid of, what it is that bothers you, what it is that you might fear. And no matter how you feel about it, try and face it, recognizing that no matter what the effect that it has on you, you can pull out of it, you can change it, because you can change your orientation, you can change your focus, you can change the way you think, and you can change the way you feel about whatever it is that frightens you or concerns you. So let those fears rumble around in there like a dirty old closet and try and identify them and see what they are. Just let your mind relax and let the ideas come through to you in a stream of consciousness and see if you can identify those things that are bothering you. They may be deep-seated. They may be things that happened recently. Whatever it is, make a mental record of those. Now, shut that door. And I want you to open the second door. And when you do, you see a flood of light coming out. And that light is like, almost like engulfs you like water, and it's cleansing. And it just washes away any of the negative feelings that you had from opening that dark door. Let this light flow through you. And let it take every one of those fears that opened up in your mind and just dissolve them, or tell you how you can dissolve them. Tell them how you should feel about it, how you could feel about it. It's a simple exercise, but it's an effective one because it's dealing with symbology. And it's the symbology of you getting in touch with your thoughts and getting in touch with your feelings. And as we've discussed, thoughts and feelings together are the basis of consciousness. And as we burn away or dissolve those negative thoughts or those negative feelings, it opens up the channel of light. It gets rid of those complexes that we discussed in the earlier segments. It helps you to deal with those because we all have them. We all have our fears. We all have our concerns. We all have our hurts. We all have the things that just don't make us feel the way that we want to feel. Sometimes we may be conscious of those things. More often than not, we aren't. And that's why this exercise is effective, because you're now dealing with this in a more relaxed state of mind, where your subconscious mind and your unconscious mind can start to divest themselves or expose some of those areas of your life that really need attention. So try that exercise and see if it makes you feel better. Please write me. You can contact me on my Facebook page at petercanovaauthor.com, or contact me through my website, which will also access you to the Facebook page, or those are means that you can get in touch with me. And let me know if this helped you. Let me know if this exercise was successful for you. I think it really can be helpful. And, you know, you don't have to limit yourself to doing it one time. You can practice this. There's other ways that you can do this. You can, instead of a door, you can have two mirrors side by side. One is a dark mirror, the other is a bright mirror, and you can see what images pass by in that dark mirror, what images present themselves to you. And those images will show that those are things that you have to deal with. And once you become aware of those things, then you just shatter that dark mirror and let the shards blow away in the wind. And now look at yourself in the bright mirror and see yourself surrounded by the light, which is basically helping you in dissolving all those negative influences that you felt when you were looking through the dark mirror. So anyway, try these exercises. I hope they work for you. And please join us next time. Now, I'm working on borrowed equipment here. As I told you, my house is pretty much destroyed along with everything I own in it. So I'm going to try and do as many new shows as I can. We may have some repeats in here, but we'll keep on with this show. The viewership has really grown tremendously. We're, I think, over almost 50,000 views right now in a fairly short period of time. So hopefully this show is helping a lot of people, and I'll see you next time. And we have come to the end of our show today. Please remember to watch us the first Tuesday of every month, and you can access the show archives through my page on Dream Visions 7 Network, which is accessible through my website, petercanova.com. So please keep on joining us. This is Quantum Spirituality, the show where the past and the present, where science and mysticism merge to tell us about our future. Join us again next time.
This ends today's segment of Quantum Spirituality, the show where the past and present merge to show us our future. Join us the first Tuesday of each month for cutting-edge information and informative new episodes. This show will be archived on the Quantum Spirituality Dream Vision 7 Radio Network website page, also accessible at petercanova.com. That's PETERCANOVA.com. This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.